Welcome to the Science Fiction Almanac Podcast, Episode 5, Star Trek Rebooted.
Hello, everyone. This is Ian J. coming at you from Atlanta, Georgia. We have another great episode for you, this time with Star Trek Reboot. Now, we went ahead and kind of had an intro to Star Trek last time that we were together, and I guess it's not too much to piece together that we have to bring up the new reboot that came out in 2009 by J.J. Abrams. Now, I guess it all started off with how a poor position Star Trek was in the early 2000s. I think it came off of Star Trek Nemesis, which was a financial and critical failure, and also Star Trek Enterprise, which, although it has some fans, ended up getting canceled. The first Star Trek season, to get canceled since the original.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think that one got a lot of following because of Scott Bakula, too. Hardcore sci-fi fans will know that he was the lead in Quantum Leap.
Oh, yeah. Ziggy says this, Ziggy says that. Great series.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk about another actor in that series whenever we get into Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, very, very true. Well, so I guess there was a long itinerary of sort of developmental happenings behind the scenes to bring this to us. Eventually, it was pretty much the team that brought MI3 to the fore, J.J. Abrams and some of the writers, kind of came together and got 2009 together, which is what we will call Star Trek, the first of the reboot, was 2009.
Oh, yeah. And whenever we're comparing it to the original series, we're going to refer to the original series as the Prime Universe.
Yes.
And the new iteration will be the alternate reality, the JJ-verse will be interchanging.
Yes, and so there's three movies in the JJ-verse. There's 2009, Into Darkness, and Beyond. And we're going to refer to them by those, like,
short names. Yeah,
exactly. Not saying Star Trek 2009 or Star Trek 2009. I'm just going to say 2009. Well, Jay, how about you kind of break it down how this entire alternate universe started? I think there was an event that triggered this all.
Oh, yeah. Right in the opening scene, we see this ship come out of a black hole, and I can't remember the name of the ship.
The Narandra? I'll look it up.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, the captain of this mystery ship calls for the captain of the Starfleet ship to come over for negotiations or whatever. This captain leaves knowing that he's about to die and takes his first officer with him as he's leaving and tells him, "You're the captain now, Captain Kirk." This is James Kirk's father. He tells him that he's going over and he's got to get everybody off the ship. So in order to stall the ship, in order to let everybody escape, he drives it into the ship. He, sets a collision course and goes down with the ship like any good captain does. While James T. Kirk
The Narada.
USS Narada.
No, all it's right. Not USS, it's Romulan, though.
Oh, that was the ship. Oh, I was talking about the Starfleet ship.
Kelvin.
The USS Kelvin. Thank you. That was going to bother me. All right, so James T. Kirk is actually being born on one of the fleeing shuttles.
Born in space.
Yeah, so then we see him as a rebellious kid driving a car. It's an antique at this point,
It's like a Mustang? I think it's
Yeah, something like that. Like an old 60s or something. Anyway, so his stepdad, we have to assume, calls him, says, "I don't care if your mother's on planet, you live in my house, bring that car back." We're talking he's maybe 10 years old. He destroys the car, he, barely makes it out, and he gets arrested, obviously. Then we cut to young Spock, who is seen in this awesome little, how would you describe their little concave?
And it wasn't a Mustang, it was a Corvette. Go ahead.
Oh, word. How would you describe kind of the computer that the Vulcan kids are standing in? The weird concave little opening?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little pit, for lack of a better term. Yeah. Were they holographic displays or something almost? And they're just taking these logic games, mathematical equation tests, things of that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Kirk, Spock, excuse me, is being tormented, right?
Yeah, by the bullies for having a human mother and being half-human.
Played by Winona Ryder.
Yeah. So we see young Spock just go off on a kid and go completely primal on him and beat the crap out of him. We actually see a little fear in the other Vulcan kid's eyes. Mm. But they're not fully developed Vulcans yet, so we can kind of let their emotions slide, I guess.
Yeah.
They're still learning to control them. Anyway, so we introduced them to kind of give you some background on them and how they entered Starfleet. Spock entered Starfleet because he was going to the Vulcan Science Academy. The High Command approved him, but because they considered his human mother a weakness or a disadvantage, you know, and they said as much, he decided, you know what, screw you guys, I'm joining Starfleet. He was the first Vulcan ever to turn down the Science Academy, or a position in the Science Academy. And then Kirk, of course, how did Kirk come in to Starfleet?
Kirk, I guess in this universe timeline, is found at a bar in Iowa, whereas I think some of the Starfleet cadets, officers, or whatever are on shore leave. And then Kirk tries to hit on Uhura, who's introduced as they're at the bar together, and I guess a bar fight breaks out, which Kirk kind of, I guess, does take a walloping. He is taking on three or four dudes.
And oh, yeah.
He's saved by Captain Christopher Pike, who kind of strolls in and kind of tries to inspire Kirk to join Starfleet in the memory of his dead father, who was, you know, a hero, saved all these people in the Kelvin incident. So Kirk is invited to appear on a shuttle. At first he says no, and then he takes a ride on his motorbike. What isn't a motorbike? It's like a hover motorcycle bike, future bike. And he sees the Enterprise being constructed.
Oh, it wasn't a regular motorcycle?
It had wheels, but there were no spokes. It was very weird.
Oh, yeah.
It was very weird. It was cool.
Yeah, and the guy's like, nice bike. Here, it's yours.
Yeah, exactly. The next day he goes on the shuttle after seeing the Enterprise being constructed. He wants to be a part of it. It looks like the Enterprise. So he goes on the shuttle and meets Bones, Leonard McCoy, for the first time. I guess he... How does that exchange happen?
Oh, yeah. He comes in and McCoy's afraid to sit or to be in this shuttle in the first place. You know, he's talking about all the things that could go wrong. He says he has a phobia of being in or of dying in like something that flies or being in something that flies. They make him sit down and he and Kirk share a drink. He shares with Kirk, well, I joined Starfleet, got nowhere else to go. The wife took the whole damn planet in the divorce. All I got left's my bones.
Yeah.
You know, that's where Kirk starts calling him Bones, whereas in the Prime Universe, he's just shortening the old term sawbones, like an 1800s term for doctors.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we don't have a lot of background on how McCoy joined Starfleet in the Prime Universe. We get a couple of hints at his past when he does a cameo in Next Generation, but we can get into that whenever we get to Next Generation.
Yeah, I think Next Generation will be an entire episode at least.
Oh, man. Maybe so a three-parter. It's going to be huge. Anyway, so because we're in an altered universe, they discover and state this in 09. We have a little bit of difference in character.
Oh, yes. So, let's start off with the...
with Kirk, I guess.
With Kirk.
Yeah.
Kirk's father dies at the beginning. The father is played by Chris Hemsworth, I believe. He's Thor, among other roles. Well, Kirk then has more of a rebellious streak. I think no one can say he was someone who played by the rules in the original. I mean, he didn't. He was demoted from admiral to captain in the Prime Universe whenever he stole the Enterprise to get Spock back. Well, in this one, he's also has a even harder rogue streak because we are led to believe by the death of his father, he had a little bit of a more difficult upbringing. Not that there's any, you know, anything wrong with that, but I think it just shows that he's more of someone who's trying to find his way.
Yeah, whereas in the original universe, he was inspired by his father to go into Starfleet.
It alleges as much because...
Or Spock says something about
it. Well, Spock is...
Spock Prime, excuse me.
Spock Prime. Well, whenever Spock of the new universe meets Spock Prime on this ice planet, Spock Prime is surprised when Spock...
When Kirk meets him on the ice planet.
Is surprised that Kirk is not the captain of the Enterprise. Thank you for that correction.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to get him crossed, too, because there are too many characters to keep him with.
Well, like we said, when we were talking about plot themes last week, if we didn't mention it, we should mention it now. Time travel is huge in Star Trek.
They retcon so many things.
It's pretty incredible. Well, anyway, maybe that's led to believe that in the Prime Universe, when Kirk had his real father there, he didn't die in the accident, he became captain at an earlier age and wasn't busted down.
Yes, Spock Prime was surprised. You know, he was like, you're not surprised. The captain of the Enterprise?
Well, this kind of another difference between the two, but also kind of dovetails into Kirk's rebellious nature is his conduct with the Kobayashi Maru, which is... Jay, what is the Kobayashi Maru?
Okay, the Kobayashi Maru is a simulation. It's supposed to be a no-win scenario.
A test.
Wherein
Starfleet
a potential captain has to learn to face death and fear, knowing that he's not going to make it out. Well, Kirk had already failed twice. I think in the Prime Universe, too, he took it three times. So he's already failed twice. You know, usually people fail and they don't go back. Well, he went back again. And again, the third time, turns out he reprogrammed the test to drop the shields of the enemy ships so that he could take them out and assist this fake USS Kobayashi Maru, like lead a rescue mission.
I think he makes the Klingon shields go down.
Yeah, like... which is interesting because we were going to talk about this later, but it kind of feels more natural to bring it up now. In the original series, the Klingons did not have warbirds. Those were Romulan ships. Yes. The Klingons had birds of prey, and they did not have the cloaking technology before the Romulans had it and before the Klingons. The Klingons eventually got it. Starfleet eventually got it. But the Klingons did not have it in Universe Prime. We were talking about this in the last episode.
I now read on Memory Alpha, which is the wiki for all canon information, they were referred to as Klingon warbirds in the opening episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Broken Bow. But then the creator of the show says that was a mistake. We made a mistake in putting that in there. They're not supposed to be warbirds.
Yeah, because the Romulans and Klingons aren't supposed to really come together and trade technology and stuff until later on in the Prime Universe. Well, I guess
they have an uneasy alliance.
Yeah, we have to believe that since we're in an alternate universe, it just happened earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, so now the Klingons have warbirds capable of cloaking.
Exactly. And then there's the deleted scene, which I have not personally seen, but apparently the Star Trek 09 is a deleted scene when the Narada is surrounded by decloaked Klingon warships.
So the Klingons come in to help fight Nero.
It's during the Kelvin incident. I don't know. I never saw the deleted scene, so I can't tell you this.
Maybe they took that out because that would insinuate... you know, another reason for tension between the Klingons and Starfleet, and they didn't really want to bring that up until the second one. Anyway, so getting back to the original point, Kirk has reprogrammed this test, whereas in the Prime Universe, he got a commendation for it, for original
thinking? Well, he said he did in Star Trek The Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
But I guess in the reboot, he's brought before, like, the academic commission for cheating, which obviously technically still did. And, of course, then Spock goes on, you know, telling him what the Kobayashi Maru is supposed to be. It's a no-win scenario. It's a test character.
Yeah.
So you would act in a situation like that, which Kirk is obviously like, I don't like to lose. He has
says he doesn't believe in no-win scenarios or situations. But that never really gets resolved because they're interrupted by the crisis on Vulcan before it's destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. Vulcan's about to go the way of the Dodo. They have to...
you know, wherein Spock loses his mother and faces his humanity. And that kind of takes us to...
Spock.
Yeah, to all of our kind of points on Spock and the differences between him and Spock Prime, which we actually get to see in the films and don't have to just, you know, conjecture from one to another. So really, this version of Spock is interesting because he has another version of himself to kind of guide him and give him advice.
Exactly.
Like, imagine if you could talk to future you.
Oh, yeah, because we were mentioning earlier, Spock Prime and Spock, you know, of the new universe are actually in communication with one another.
Yeah.
They rationalize it with being that since there's so few Vulcans that they cannot afford to not know one another.
Right, and Spock came into the picture because of Nero in the first place.
Yeah.
He was trying to save Romulus. You know, 129 years in the future, but with a singularity to soak up a supernova that was going to wipe it out. But he just wasn't in time. It flared up before they expected it to, and Romulus was destroyed. Nero blamed him. They both got sucked into the singularity and sent back into the past, albeit at different times. Spock got sent back 25 years later.
Yeah.
you know, just in time for Nero's second engagement with Starfleet.
Yeah.
So anyway, this iteration of Spock in the alternate universe, he's still Vulcan and human. We see a lot more of his relationship with his human mother, you know, and him kind of embracing his humanity through her and her encouraging that.
He's definitely more emotional in this one, I think.
Yeah, especially after Vulcan's destroyed and he loses his mother.
And there's the whole issue with Uhura, which I don't get.
Yeah, they're in a relationship, even though it's student-teacher.
Because, and then it's like in the original Star Trek, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, that Vulcans are only supposed to get in quote-unquote heat every 7 years in a process called Ponfar. Yet now...
Right.
Yeah, like you said, now he's carrying on a relationship, an intimate relationship with a
clandestine...
Yeah, with a junior officer that's also contrary to, like, his biology as, you know, elucidated or as they lay it out in the original one or in the Prime, which this shouldn't be affected by the reboot because the Kelvin happened, like, what, 20 or 30 years before Star Trek 09. And then, obviously, I would think that this whole entire Ponfar thing came way before.
Right, but then...
Surak or something.
We have to wonder if, being half-human, if Spock Prime had, you know, the human, like, reproductive urges, that he was just more capable of subduing because of his choice to be more Vulcan, which... Or whereas this Spock in the alternate universe seems to be straddling the fence a lot longer than Spock Prime did.
Yes.
So kind of, I guess, toying with bits of both worlds. He liked.
In Star Trek Beyond, he also seems more emotional, too. But yeah. I guess McCoy justifies her by saying that he's lost a lot of blood and he's kind of delusional. But there's other moments
still.
Yeah, but
this Spock is also, like, chosen to embrace his humanity. He even says as much... Well... He kind of hints at it in 09, because Kirk actually has to take command from Spock. Another thing that kind of gets flipped from Universe Prime to the alternate universe, you know. Universe Prime, Spock was the first officer of the Enterprise under Pike, and then Kirk. So they already have that relationship established of, like, the chain of command.
Yeah.
Well, Kirk has to trick Spock into... losing control emotionally after
being told to trick Spock by Spock.
Yeah. Spock Prime was like, Kirk, you have to be captain of the Enterprise for all this to work out. So just get Spock to, you know, admit that he is not emotionally capable of being captain of the ship.
Yeah, emotionally compromised.
Yeah,
Starfleet regulation.
So, but after he's had a chance to calm down, Kirk is, you know, going to carry out his plan of action to pursue Nero... near Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, sir.
You know, Spock comes up and says, you know, I can be of assistance. Earth is the only home I have now after Vulcan has been destroyed. And then, you know, later on, Spock Prime, whenever they meet and, you know, he says there are too few Vulcans left for us to ignore each other, he kind of gives him the advice to be his own man. To not worry about being too Vulcan or too human, just to be himself. And that everything will work out. That's kind of what Spock Prime ended up on after everything was said and done. We see him embracing his humanity more, but never abandoning the cold Vulcan logic. But, you know, Spock Prime, in old age, seemed to show both sides. You know, Captain, now the logical thing to do would be this, but if you're looking for a more human approach or emotional approach, then do this. You know, whereas earlier Spock would say, oh, emotion... human, whatever. No, none of that.
No.
He's kind of... What was it we were discussing? His father told him whenever they're pursuing Nero to kind of get
the revenge?
Yeah. He
was definitely
like,
more into revenge. I guess the destruction of Vulcan kind of hit both.
Yeah.
I mean, all Vulcans that were left hard.
And he was talking about, after losing his mother to his father, you know, the rage that he had built up. And he said, you know... I'm going to tell you what your mother would tell you. Or he was like, I don't know how to control the rage. Well, your mother would tell you not to, so don't. And, you know, then Spock's father goes on to say, you know, I married your mother because I loved her, not because of any political reasons.
Yeah, no, because it was
showing
logical.
That Vulcans are emotional, even though they like to kind of put forth that mask that they've been all but wiped out in Vulcan culture. And
it's true.
The Vulcan psyche, but they are still very much there. So, yeah, otherwise, he's still Spock, man. Zachary Quinto has done Spot a great on. Job, and also, man.
Going back to Kirk, Chris Pine does a great job.
Yeah.
Like, the casting of the new reboots, we should have...
Oh, man, with Simon Pegg as Scotty, it's great. And he's writing them now, which is great, because if you guys have seen Paul or The World's End, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, the only one of those flicks that isn't sci-fi, but you will know, this guy is a great writer. He just makes great movies. So I'm really, really glad he's taken over as, you know, kind of one of the head writers.
Exactly. Especially, like, he started writing, or he did write Star Trek Beyond, which is, I think, still has in theaters as of today, August the 14th, 2016.
It was great.
It's a good movie, guys. We actually, and girls, we recommend that you go out and watch it. Support the movie. I know some people may not like the J.J. verse, but if we want to keep on having Star Trek...
Yeah, and he's not directing anymore, so...
Jeremy Lin, I think.
Yeah, he jumped ship to Star Wars. Still great. We'll have to talk about that in, like, 20 episodes.
Yeah, Star Wars in itself is a very monumental undertaking.
Oh, yeah. So,
We are both Trek and Wars fans, though.
Right, we feel everybody should be. You shouldn't have to decide.
Shouldn't have to decide. There's too much good stuff out there, yeah. Guys.
So, All right, now we've hit our plan a little out of order here. I guess we need to talk about McCoy, too.
Of course.
We talked about his difference, really, was his entry into Starfleet, you know, from the divorce, whereas in...
He's still a crotchety old doctor.
Yeah, old country doctor. Okay. He's still... This guy is just McCoy. That just shows you.
Great. Yeah,
this shows you that, like, McCoy's character, no matter what, alternate universe or not, he's still the same old dude.
Yeah, same.
It's kind of great.
Well, yeah.
He's still there to,
He acts like an old dude, because I don't think Carl Urban is necessarily that old. I mean, I would think he's in his 40s.
No. What was it? In the last episode, did you say Kirk was kind of the defining border between McCoy and Spock?
Yeah, Spock was, like, overly logical. Yeah. Whereas, like, McCoy was, like, irrational, and then Kirk kind of was, like, the mediator.
It seems like in the alternate universe, that's been switched, though, and now McCoy is the bridge between the two of them. That he's the more rational one, always given metaphors. Damn it, Jim, don't do this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Kirk kind of being more emotional and liable to fly off the handle. Yeah.
Just rash. I don't know.
That's an interesting way to look at it. So other characters, Uhura is great. Her key difference is her relationship with
Spock.
And that this Uhura knows... every language, you know.
She's very good. I guess she was part of some sort of communication club or...
You mentioned that in Star Trek VI, she couldn't speak Klingon.
In Star Trek VI, there's a scene whenever they're going to Rua Penthe or whatever to pick up Spock and Kirk, where they have to talk to, like, a Klingon listening post, but they can't use a universal translator because allegedly it would be recognized. So they have to literally, like, open these huge books, which is hilarious because, I mean, now they wouldn't be this way.
Right.
Like in a PDF somewhere. And they have to speak Klingon, you know, her and I think Chekhov have to speak Klingon.
Yeah.
They butcher it.
Yeah. So, anyway, in but the alternate...
she speaks it fluently.
Yeah. She's fluent in... all dialects of Romulan. She knows everything.
They
don't seem to rely on the universal translator.
There's an episode in Star Trek Beyond, they have it, but yeah, I don't really see it in Star Trek Into Darkness. Then again, Into Darkness, she speaks to Klingon straight up, And in Star Trek 09, the only alien, the Romulans, spoke English.
Yeah, weird stuff. You know, Sulu is great, man. Henry Cho is a great Sulu. As kind of an homage to George Takei, they made the decision for Sulu to be gay in the alternate universe. You know, George Takei wasn't really on board with it, though. He was like, you know, that's great, I'm flattered and everything, but I think it would be far more important to have a Muslim character or something like that in Star Trek. That's the type of thing you should be looking at, you know, that kind of going back to, you know, who he felt Sulu was as a character after talking to Gene Roddenberry and doing the original series and all the films, you know, he was definitely on the side, and I think we should take his side because, I mean, he was Mr. Sulu, dude.
I agree.
George Takei.
And he also respected like, Roddenberry.
Yeah, he was like, that's not really who Sulu is. Sulu's not a gay guy. He's, you know, whatever. But, I don't know. I thought that was interesting to see, like, different opinions on that, and for George Takei to not necessarily come out against it, but to say, you know, he didn't see it the same way.
Interesting. I mean, I think it's a very good point to bring
up. It was weird. But very, very interesting. George Takei is like, I mean, you guys know who he is. You're sci-fi geeks.
He's, yeah,
he's
hilarious.
Like a sci-fi demigod, man.
Laugh,
like,
apparently.
Yeah, he's great.
Great.
He's like a cultural icon. Even more so, I think, than like William Shatner at this point.
Yeah, William Shatner had like the bump for the Priceline commercials.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, most of the other times, I think it's usually people making fun of Bill Shatner in some way.
He had a Comedy Central roast. He had albums over the years. Yeah. he seems more ripe for parody, it seems.
Very true.
And, all right, so, you know, we've got storyline flips here, but we've talked about those a lot. Kind of how Kirk and Spock had to battle for command of the Enterprise.
Let's talk about briefly the issue or the theme of the utopia that is the Federation.
Yeah.
So, in the original, as you've noticed, or as you can recall, or if you know anything about Star Trek, when it first was created, Gene Roddenberry wanted to make this sort of utopia, you know, in light of how bad the world was at the time, or what he perceived as a bad world. There was the Cold War, racism, stuff like that. Star Trek was supposed to transcend that by saying humanity didn't blow itself up in the nuclear age and racism. We've moved past that. Everyone works together. In Star Trek, the reboot, the issues of what is the Federation supposed to be really about, they come up. And I arguably, definitely in Into Darkness and definitely in Beyond. In Star Trek 09, I can't really...
Not so much, only...
The reference
when,
to the peacekeeping armada.
Yeah, I think it's McCoy that says it.
Like, no, I think Christopher Pike says it.
Oh, we're a peacekeeping armada,
yeah,
we're not...
a humanitarian peacekeeping armada.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're not going to like engage militarily... Unless it's like self-defense or something.
And in Into Darkness, I guess there's this like rogue general, or excuse me, admiral that wants to
wage war.
Carol Marcus's father.
Oh, yeah, that's another difference. Well, we haven't actually seen if anything's going to resolve from that relationship.
True.
Because in the Universe Prime, they saw one another, then it had been years.
Yeah.
Like, they saw one another in the original series, I think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Or first movie. Yeah, I think it's something like that. But, so who knows, maybe in Star Trek 4, we'll see that she's got, like, a 5-year-old kid or something at the end of the mission.
Yeah.
Whenever they go home.
Yeah, but, yeah, I guess the...
So, back to Admiral Marcus, sorry for that segue.
No, it's good. No, perfect. Well, yeah, he's building a dreadnought in secret, which is, you know, a battleship. He wants to wage war against the Klingons by manufacturing a conflict using Khan. Sorry, spoiler alert. Yeah. And then in Star Trek Beyond, you also have a disgruntled this is another spoiler alert, if you're going to watch it. The main antagonist is Krall, who's actually a human who is bitter about being marooned on this planet after...
What, like 100 years before?
A while ago.
Yeah.
Apparently he was like a veteran of the Zindi and Earth-Romulan Wars, which are topics that were outlined in Star Trek Enterprise. And then I guess he crash-landed there, and now he's kind of, you know, sore that the Federation's moved on beyond needing people.
And just
like
to
that.
Clarify, the events of Enterprise took place well before the original series.
Yeah, so it's still considered.
It was kind of like the first iteration of, or really Starfleet getting off the ground.
Yeah. The founding of the Federation, I think, is where it ends. Or they're on the cusp of the founding of the generation.
Oh,
the
nice. So, and Into Darkness, that was.
By far the weakest of the movies.
Yeah. I mean, they tried. There were some casting issues people weren't happy about. You know, Khan Noonien Singh being played by a white guy. Benjamin Cumberbatch did a brilliant job.
He's a great actor.
But, you know, just Khan's supposed to be like an Indian guy or something, you know.
Yeah, and he was a Cuban guy in the original one, which they kind of diluted the Indian to Cuban. I'm not Cuban myself, but, I mean, still.
You know, his name is Khan.
His name is Khan.
Come on. So, all right, are there any more points we want to hit on this? Do we want to talk about the tech at all? There were some differences in the tech.
Yeah, the tech was definitely everything. There's a lot more money being involved in these movies, so the sets are pretty nice. Not to say that I think Star Trek The Motion Picture had a big budget. Some of them did, but there's definitely high production values and great score. I forget the name of the composer, but you owe it to yourself to listen to the score, but it's great.
Amazing.
The phasers are kind of differently. They're more like guns this time. They shoot,
especially, like, even the bigger ships, phasers. Like
even on the ships, they're like, and it's like, they're still focused on torpedoes.
Right.
Shields, warp drive.
Oh, they did. They did have a superior warp in the Dreadnought class. It actually chased the Enterprise down while it was in warp and took him out of warp, man.
Yeah.
It was wild.
The Dreadnought was huge.
Yeah, the Dreadnought was a bad ship. It's probably one of the coolest Starfleet ships we've ever seen. You know, but since it was militarized, he kept it secret.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe y'all can tell us what your favorite starship design of the Star Trek universe is.
Otherwise, everything just felt more sleek. It didn't seem as, like, industrial as the original series. All the old school computers.
So low
and the
budget,
The communicators were different. They were like little flip phone deals.
Well, that's how they were in, like, the original.
Oh, yeah.
They were the flippies. And the flip forward. They made that shirt.
Oh, yeah. They did. That's great. I wonder if that's where the chirp came from, you know?
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah.
That's a cool cricket mobile thing. All right, and
should we go over...
Now, before we... There's a new series coming up we want to talk about real quick at the end here, but before we do, we got to talk about something that could hold up production of the next Star Trek film. We didn't talk about Chekhov yet for a good reason. Sadly, the actor a couple of months ago, Anton Yelchin, died in a tragic accident. There was like a recall on his Jeep or something where you can... The deal with it was you could put it in park seemingly, but it'd actually still be in drive or neutral. And, you know, he put it in park to check his mail or something, and it just rolled back on him. And I think Simon Pegg, other people attached to the films, have said they're not going to recast Chekhov.
Good move.
Yeah, because, I mean, that would be in poor taste, for one, for the actor, who did a fantastic
Brilliant job.
God, he was great. And you were looking up some other stuff. You said he was in, like, a lot of other sci-fi stuff.
Well, he was in Terminator Salvation. He was in, I don't know if he was in a lot of other stuff. I know he was in a movie called Charlie Bartlett, which I saw, which was actually not bad.
Oh, yeah, man. I feel like we saw him in something else we watched recently. And we were like, dude, that's Chekhov, but I can't remember what it is. But, yeah, that actor was... busy, man. He did a lot of stuff. I mean, that's kind of going to cause a big heartfelt pang in the Star Trek universe and among the fans, you know, to not have Chekhov.
Yeah, Star Trek, or by the way, also Leonard Nimoy died, so there will be no more Star Trek Prime.
Or no more Spock Prime. Yeah, Prime. And they did that so tastefully and beyond. Spoiler alert, they brought up that Ambassador Spock had died.
Yeah. So, it was tastefully done. You're right.
Yeah, they just delivered all of his stuff to alternate universe Spock and said, you know, these are all of Ambassador Spock's belongings. We thought they should go to you, you know, since it's you.
Yeah.
And at one point, Spock actually thinks about leaving Starfleet to take up Spock Prime's work.
Yeah.
With, you know, making sure, or kind of overseeing the foundation of New Vulcan. But anyway, you know, he's not going to leave Starfleet. He's Spock. We need Spock.
Yep, we do need him. The Enterprise needs him.
Yeah, and now there's some more exciting things going on with the Star Trek universe. We're getting a new series in January of 2017.
What is it called?
Star Trek Discovery. It's supposed to take place 10 years before the events of the original series.
In Prime Universe.
And it's in Prime Universe, yeah. It's apart from the alternate universe. It's going to be kind of weird. It's being released by CBS. Now, the premiere will happen on CBS. You'll be able to watch it on TV. But then, the show will premiere on CBS All Access, their streaming service. It's kind of tricky. For other countries, it will be released onto Netflix the very next day. So, you know, an episode a week on Netflix, you can keep up with Star Trek. In every country, I think there are like 119 countries or something, like so many, that they're releasing it in on Netflix. But every country except the U.S. and Canada. The U.S., you'll only be able to watch it on CBS All Access. I'm not going to tell you to, like, watch it illegally or anything. And in Canada, it's going to be on a Canadian streaming service called Crave TV. So if you have either of those, you're in good shape to watch Star Trek. If not, then going to have to figure something out. Or something else out. So, you know, that's... I really, really want that to be a good series, man.
Me too.
It has the potential. Could really be a shot in the arm. You've got the technology. It could be great. They might, you know, if it does well, they might bring it to CBS proper. Who knows? And we'll be able to watch it, you know, Thursday nights or whenever. That would be incredible. I would love to have a Star Trek night once a week. Now, what do you want to see in this series or in, like, the upcoming movies?
Well, at least in the upcoming movies, I want to see the Klingons come into a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think that they were just kind of touched upon really briefly in Star Trek Into Darkness. And
I hope they adapt the look a little bit.
Yeah, I do like the look of that. Yeah, they look kind of weird. I would like to avoid a time travel plot next time. Yeah. I think that maybe that's already been done in this series, and I just think that it should be... Should be handled. Oh, another thing. I want to see the Enterprise take on another ship and not almost always get destroyed.
Right. I want to see him just, like, hulk out on another ship.
Well, like, yeah, exactly.
Show him who's boss.
In the first one, the Narada kills it or, you know, heavily damages it because it's from the future. And the second one, Inner Darkness, the Dreadnought heavily...
Just almost takes it out.
Whatever,
man.
Yeah, the name of that ship is. And the third one...
Oh, spoiler alert.
It's freaking destroyed.
And it's sick.
It is incredible. So sick.
But
the one destruction thing, it deserves.
Yeah, one thing that I've always noticed is the disc never flips whenever a starship crashes. The disc never flips over. It could detach from the warp engines, but it never flips.
Apparently there's references to the saucer separating from the primary, from like the engineering, even in the original series.
Oh yeah, we gotta backtrack and do some homework on that.
Yeah,
but I remember something about that.
I mean, if you recall in Star Trek Generations, the Galaxy class Enterprise is like that's how it.
Oh yeah.
In Star Trek III, the Starship Spock, I think they just turned the self destruct.
Yeah, and just bail. What else do you want to see come up in like the new
series? I mean,
the new films.
I wonder who they're going to recast as Chekhov. I wonder who that's going to be.
Well, they said they're not going to recast.
Well, I'm saying who they're going to fill up the role. If they're going to fill up the role. Like, if that's an ensign or some sort of, like, officer that they're going to have to replace.
Okay. Yeah, they're going to have to do something, man. Maybe we'll see. Since Chekhov started out at 17 in 09, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll see someone young from Next Generation or something.
Well, Next Generation takes place like 70 years.
Oh, yeah, good point. So that would be too young. I don't know, man. Who else could we possibly see there? I can't think of anybody.
I think what I read on the internet, and I think it's a great idea, is that the story will be that Chekhov is promoted to first officer of the Reliant, and then
the
Lieutenant
ship that
Savick
he's the captain
in.
Of in the original universe later on.
Well, he's not the captain. I think he's the first officer. Captain Terrell, I think, is the captain.
Oh, really? So Sulu does become a captain, though.
Yeah, but he's the captain of the Excelsior.
Yeah.
And have then the Lieutenant Valeric, I think is... No, is it... Who is it? The one that was... No, Lieutenant Valeris was from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Lieutenant Savick is the Christy Alley's character that is the officer that replaces Chekhov when he's promoted to...
That would be awesome.
That would be sick.
That character in.
And
that
brought, like,
would
another
be
Vulcan in.
Perfect,
but there
yeah.
aren't many Vulcans around, so I don't know.
Yeah, but you might have some like-minded Vulcans who thought that they could serve in Starfleet, do some good, see the universe, you know,
maybe.
Since they don't have a home, and, you know. Because they said there were like 10,000 Vulcans left.
Wow, that was it?
Yeah. So, not a lot left, yeah. So, I think we should see the Romulans come in more, because we didn't get to see the Romulans proper, really. We saw Nero and his crew.
He's technically Prime Universe Romulan.
Yeah, he's still Romulan, but from 129 years in the future, so not really... He even says, we stand apart from the Romulan Empire. We're not with the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to see, like, the Empire come into play, man.
Maybe some sort of, like... impending war between the Romulans and the Klingons, and the Federation has to go in and try to defuse it.
Oh, that would be really cool, man. I'd like to see some other races. I think we're in agreement. We don't want to see any Borg yet.
No Borg, no.
And Q would be cool, though, even though he didn't really turn up.
I don't think he did.
In the original, Universe Prime, until Next Generation.
I think, yeah, in Encounter at Farpoint. Which is the first episode.
Now, but, you know, we're in an alternate reality, and So, I mean,
the Q would have.
Q can exist in both of those realities, man. He's like a transdimensional being. He's almost godlike. You guys need to check out this game that I've been playing on my iPhone. It's this great Star Trek game. It is called, it's just Star Trek. Awesome. I thought there was something else to it.
What platform is it available on?
It's on iTunes. I don't know if it's on Android. Probably. It's great. You guys need to check it out. It's so much fun. I can't stop playing it. Yeah, we were playing it a little bit a couple of weeks ago. It was pretty sweet. And, yeah, so, I don't know. I can't really think of anything else right now that I would want to see.
There's a lot. I just hope that they keep the storyline focus. I hope that they give all the actors, all the characters, the sufficient screen time, which I think was a complaint about the second one.
Yeah, the third one was great. They really rectified that. Spoiler alert. In the kind of, I guess, mission statement that they do from the original Space, the Final Frontier. Yeah. These are the Voyagers. You know,
oh, that was very cool.
All did it. So, you know, everybody had a little segment of it to say instead of it just being Kirk or, and I like in Star Trek 09, they ended it with Spock Prime.
Ah, yes.
And that was awesome because he's kind of setting them up, you know, knowing what they're in for. These are the voyages of Star Trek Enterprise, or that Star Trek Enterprise, excuse me, the USS Enterprise.
Starship Enterprise.
Blah.
Seek out new worlds. That
was really cool. Any bits of, like, trivia? I did notice whenever we rewatched Into Darkness the other day that they brought up Mudd.
Ah, yes.
From the original universe. Harry Mudd, he was like a con man. We mentioned him last episode.
Well, then there's the Green Orion girl in 09.
Oh, yeah. Uhura's roommate. And you had a bit of trivia from that.
Apparently in the novelization of the Star Trek 09, the Kirk gets the idea... Or it gets, like, tips on how to beat the Kobayashi Maru and cheat on the Kobayashi Maru from his late-night rendezvous or his rendezvous with this Orion girl who apparently talks in her sleep.
Right. In the film, we see that Kirk is visiting an Orion girl who's roommates
with Uhura.
Uhura.
And in the second one, I think he also has, like, the menage a trois with, like, cat...
Yeah, I'm not sure what those aliens were. Some girl pops up and she's got a tail, then a girl who looks exactly like her pops up and has a tail.
I mean, Kirk, he is a scoundrel at times.
He is. Starship Casanova. All right, so is there anything else we really want to hit on this? I think we're pretty...
Overall, I like the reboot. I think Star Trek Into Darkness was kind of a bad one. Was a bad one, but I think overall they did a good job.
Yeah, and it's still enjoyable.
I think so too.
You know, especially if you're not a Star Trek fan already, you'll probably love it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, we have some things.
The pacing's not the same.
Pick it apart, yeah. And now the pacing of these movies has been great, man.
It's, like, very quick. It's like Star Wars. I think that's what J.J. Abrams said. He wanted to have Star Trek at Star Wars' pace.
Yeah, so, you know, the payoffs come a lot sooner, and we don't have as many cliffhangers as the series. Of course not the series. That's a week-to-week, you know.
I guess from Next Generation.
Original movies. Yeah.
Because I guess there was... The original series was kind of swashbuckling, you know.
Yeah. Now, oh, man, we're at 44 minutes almost. That's great. This is a long episode, guys. So anyway, without droning on any more about it, we hope you've enjoyed this episode.
Yes.
Hope you have a good morning, afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening. If you haven't seen Star Trek Beyond and it's still in theaters at the point in which you're listening to this, please check it out. If it's on DVD, check it out then. Just check out everything Star Trek. Everything sci-fi, really.
Yeah. Avoid Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
If you want to watch it for continuity, go ahead, but yeah. No.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a good one. This is J&E signing out in Atlanta.
Transmission ended.